This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It's always a fun conversation when we bring this man to the table. He's one of my favorite Ryans that cover the Seattle Mariners. Is he the best Ryan?
He's the best Ryan that we talk to that covers the Seattle Mariners.
Oh, poor Divish. Poor Divish. Well, joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, you know who he is. Our favorite Bogan, by the way, Ryan Rowland-Smith. Ryan, how are you, man?
And better looking, too. Let's not forget that.
Oh, sir.
Now he's listening.
That's not even really part of the debate, is it? I mean, come on. That's not even fair.
That's what's important, man. Hey, my dad always said, look, son, it's not whether you win or lose, how good you look. You know what I mean? So I've always stuck to that.
Hey, let's get your response to what the biggest news around this team is, and that's the impending call-up of Jared Kelnick on Thursday. It's being reported everywhere. Now, Scott Servais was asked this morning about it on this station, and he had a lot of words, none of which confirmed that Kelnick's being called up.
Of course.
Let's just go ahead and assume it's true, even though it's not been confirmed. What do you think the plan was going? We were talking yesterday about the plan for them. Did they need to see a certain number of at-bats? Did they need to just see a certain number of games or just a certain amount of time? And did his success early switch that plan up? Or what do you think the idea was going into this season for Jared Kelnick?
Well, first of all, I like it when teams have enough of a structure and enough players where they can generate those plans. Where they can say, look, we've got enough here. We know what we're doing with you as a young man. We're going to do a six-man rotation, for example, to make sure this, that, and the other, X, Y, Z, and they stick to them. I think there's a little bit of both. I think when you look at, first of all, Jared Kelnick just blew it up. Now, it is anecdotal. I mean, it's literally the first week of minor league baseball. So you look at that and think, well, you know, are we really dialed in here from pitching? Everyone says, oh, pitchers are way ahead of the hitters. It's not always the case, right? He's obviously dialed in. He's, you know, sort of pushed the buttons a little bit, and it's created this reaction around Twitter, social media. Everyone's talking about it. We're in a different generation. And on top of that, too, I think just the fact that the team, there's nothing, and I say this with all due respect, there's really nothing in front of him stopping him from coming up. And when I look at this, I'm excited about seeing Jared Kelnick. Don't get me wrong. I like the fact the Mariners, you know what, got off their plan a little bit. No problem. I've got no problem whatsoever with that. But if you did have a situation where he is coming up in the right circumstances, in other words, you don't want this to be reactionary because the team's struggling and they're starting to press panic buttons and, hey, let's get this kid up here right now. You would rather see it, and it's not the case, and everyone comes up at different times, you'd rather see a bunch of young guys and a bunch of veterans killing it at the big league level, consistent, tearing it up, and then him having to force the issue, whether that's this week or 3 months from now. That's not the case, but regardless of that, I'm excited to see him. I think it's just a simple combination of the Mariners like, oh, yeah, he looks good, let's do it, and as well as nothing really in front of him stopping him from coming up.
What about his personality, Ryan? What do you make of this kid? I mean, we just heard things. Have you got a chance to talk to him? You know, is he gonna rub people the wrong way? What do you think?
There could be a little bit of that. Look, I haven't had a chance to talk to him. I'm pretty fair with it. I give everyone a massive chance when it comes to personalities. I can see through if it's an act. Usually, when I'm in that club, you know, I'm talking about from as a player. If I'm a veteran, if I'm a rookie, you can start certain behaviors can rub you the wrong way. Now, he's coming into an environment where there's a lot of young players. Some of his buddies are on the team. It's not like he's coming in with everyone salty, 35 years old, with 15 years, 10 years in the league, and it's don't touch the remote kid, and he's just, all over the place. It's not a situation like that. It's a different dynamic the locker room he's walking into. I could possibly see it rub people the wrong way, but it always comes down to this. I'll throw him under the bus. There was a kid, his name was Bud Norris. He was with the Astros for a while. He jumped around the big leagues.
Yep.
When this kid was tearing it up, he was a pitcher, right-handed pitcher. When he was tearing it up, he rubbed people the wrong way, man. He was obnoxious. And if I'm sure Bud's not listening, who knows. But he was obnoxious, man. I'm just going to say it straight up. When he was doing his thing, you know, hey, just let him do his thing. He's going to roll your eyes, look the other way. But when he wasn't doing his thing, when he was struggling, when he wasn't hitting the weight room, and that's not Jared Kelenic, I'm just using this kid as an example. Well, then all of a sudden, it rubs you the wrong way. It is completely magnified. Now, I think with Jared Kelenic, you know, we see that competitiveness. I think there's a lot to be respected about that. I think if he walks in that locker room, does his thing on the field, tears it up like we all know he's capable of, treats his teammates with respect, he's got his buddies, I think it's going to be okay. I've got no problem with that whatsoever as a teammate of his or as someone watching him. But if there is certain things that there all of a sudden respect goes out the window because he goes over 20, then we have a different situation. But I think there's enough good vibes in that locker room for that not to happen and to make sure he's a good dude.
You know, Ryan, in talking about Kelenic or Gilbert or any of these guys being called up, Cal Raleigh, there's always the cautionary tale of Mike Zunino and Justin Smoak and Dustin Ackley, and all of these guys were thrown in there too quick, and it really, really impacted their development. I don't know how much of that is true or isn't. It's just sort of become true over time. A, do you buy that they were rushed up and it did impact the way they developed? And do you have any fear of that with these guys, starting with Kelenic, or if Gilbert gets called up, or if Cal Raleigh's a little older, so maybe it'd be different. But just the comparison.
Look, there is a little bit of fear of that. I think you have to roll the dice regardless. He's got to come up at some point, right? I think a lot of it has to do with what environment he walks into, what mentors, what people are in front of him, guys who he looks up to in the locker room have a lot to do with it. But from what I've heard, and I've asked, look, man, is this guy the real deal? From a front office standpoint, and also guys who have faced him, they say, look, man, this dude makes, and this is guys playing against him, they said he makes a lot of hard contact on pitches you shouldn't make hard contact on, number one. And number two, when he gets a pitch, he doesn't miss it. So when you hear those couple things, you're like, okay, all right, I think this kid can hang. He can deal with a 96 or one of the nastiest sliders you'll ever see and hang. I think, and also, too, I think he's in a different conversation. When you talk about some of these guys and you refer to, you know, some of the Mariners who didn't pan out or something went on 2 years down the track, you're like, what happened to that dude? Or it just didn't quite, you see that soft 240, like, oh man, I think he's in a different conversation than that. I really do, from what I've heard. But a lot of that has to do with what environment is he walking into. I think with the Mariners right now, there's this new, refreshing, exciting conversation going on with this team. And he's walking right into that. And I'm hoping, we're all hoping, obviously, that 5 years from now you go back and you remember this debut and you remember how he tore it up or he struggled and all of a sudden he figured it out. Now he's an absolute superstar. You hope that's the case. But I just think that there's enough of a good vibe going on right now with some of these young players. They're going to trickle into the system beyond Jared Kelenic. I think he'll be okay when it comes to that.
Ryan, it's so interesting hearing from pitchers like yourselves and, you know, all the things that, you know, I just sit there and watch him throw it into the catcher's glove. And, you know, I never think, you know, every once in a while I'll daydream and not be thinking about, oh, he's trying to set him up. Oh, he's trying to do something early in the count and everything. Are you able to call, do you think, for the most part, when you're watching a game or you're sitting there going, are you just enjoying it or are you going, oh, he's got to come back with a slider here? What's the process when you watch it?
All the time. Sometimes I'm zombie scrolling Bob Stelton's tweets and saying, why is he tweeting that out? Oh, that's not right.
Yeah.
But other times, man, but other times I'm locked in and I'm like, you know, you watch like a Justice Sheffield and you kind of have an idea of his repertoire or his history, what he's trying to do. And you see, you know, what are we trying to do? He throws that pitch like, oh man. And a lot of the times it's getting to two strikes it's not easy, but getting to two strikes is not the hard part. Executing with two strikes, that's the difficult part. So watch, for example, Justice Sheffield just recently. You can kind of see those little stalls, delay, gets the two strikes, is that deeper breath, and then trying to do too much with that pitch. What's he going to come back with in the next 12 seconds to make up for that pitch? All those little things, I get really into that. And you mentioned one thing I didn't mention as well. You're talking about these young prospects. I remember being at spring training. There's all this hype about these young players. And I was a couple of years into my career, and I'm facing some of these dudes. I'm like, oh, this guy, everyone's talking about this dude. Not at the extent they are now. So I'll throw a pitch. I'm like, oh, I got you. I got you all day with this next sequence I'm going to throw you. And you can blow them up. Other guys, you just cannot do that, man. You have to execute. And I didn't have good stuff. I'll tell you right now. I was very mediocre. But there was times where, man, you throw that pitch and you just becomes inherently that feel of what you want to do next. And I love watching that, man. Absolutely. Again, if I'm locked in, I look at that stuff, and you just know, you can sort of sense what's going to happen next.
Just know that when Bob tweets you, like half the time it's a broken leg or somebody smashing their arm or their head or something.
What did you call it? Zombie scrolling? Is that what you said?
I'm the worst, man. I think, yeah, you know, everyone's like that. But I'll sit there. I'm supposed to be asleep at 12:30 at night. I'm like, what am I doing? I keep just scrolling through this rubbish on Twitter. What am I doing? You know? So, and after that, I'm just, but no, but Bob's got some good stuff on there. I'm just messing around. He's got some stuff.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, quickly, we know you got limited time here, but I want to ask you about the 6-man rotation and the idea of keeping it intact and sort of taping it together with the bullpen. And I mean, the amount of injuries this team has suffered, I don't know how it compares to the rest of the league, but you've already lost, obviously, Marco and Paxton. Then you lose Paxton's replacement and Mark Gavichis, and you've lost Keenan, and you've lost LJ. It's just the injuries are just piling up, and the 6-man rotation seems problematic at best when you're dealing with that. What do you think? Would it be better served to go back to a 5-man, or do you think everybody's sort of gotten in the rhythm of the 6-man, so you want to just keep that going?
It would be problematic to go back to the 5-man rotation. Here's why. Because when you have Justin Sheffield, Justin Dunn, even Kikuchi, for example, right? Even the James Paxton before he got hurt. You have these conversations in February with these guys saying, look, these are the days off you're going to get. This is going to be the routine. And all of a sudden, you react to some injuries. And all of a sudden, oh, hey, we're now switching that up. First of all, you're standing there at batting practice talking to each other, going, oh, man, I thought we were supposed to be doing this routine. And it's completely different. People are going to hate me for saying this. But keep the 6-man rotation. The minor league's just kicked off. There's going to be that dude. There's more pitchers down in AAA besides Logan Gilbert who can dominate. And there's guys sitting at home right now who you can pick up and fill in. You can rattle off name after name of guys who came and go, oh, he came out of nowhere, or he had a different offseason, and now he's resurrected his career. Who can fill those gaps? The 6-man rotation serves the guys who are already there. When I'm talking about Kikuchi, Justin Sheffield, Justin Dunn, some of those guys, where they basically were told, this is how we're going to operate and stick with it, as opposed to, oh, hey, sorry, now you got one less day of recovery, or we're going to switch the and then what do you go back to a 6-man rotation because you want to get someone back out there when Marco comes back? Stick with a 6-man rotation. I think that's the way to go.
Ryan, always good to talk to you. We appreciate it. No, you got limited time. So thanks so much, as always, and we will talk to you again next week.
I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
There you go. Ryan Roland Smith. He's our favorite Ryan who covers the Mariners, right? Is that how it was supposed to be said?
I got a text from Condota last week. So Condota and Divish are buddies.
Yeah.
And I told Divish, I go, one of the reasons I love you is because you're friends with Bob Condota. Condota's a great dude. But anyway, Condota texts me, you should say to Ryan Roland Smith, he's the favorite Ryan, your favorite Ryan that covers the Mariners. Ha, ha, ha. Thinking he's so funny, going to stick it to his buddy Divish.
I don't think Divish would care. He'd be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, just whatever, Condota.
Yeah, whatever, guy. You really got me there. Hey, a reminder. I forgot to mention this earlier. It's one a day for the month of May. In this month, 710 ESPN Seattle is giving you 31 chances to win a station-logoed smart speaker. So head to 710sports.com/win to learn how. And don't forget, all you have to do is just tell it to play 710 ESPN Seattle or 710 AM, and it becomes a radio right there. Listen to our shows all day long from the comfort of your home.
Just tell it to watch Wyman and Bob or listen to Wyman and Bob, whatever. That's all you need.
I like that, or Wyman, or whatever.
Yeah, I said watch. You know what I mean?
Well, some of them have video on there. You never know what anybody's
got. Yeah, the video thing, like I can't go in there in the studio and eat lunch anymore because people giving me a hard time.
They can see you.
Yeah, they can see you.
You can't hide.
Trying to go in there during the break, somebody texted in like, geez, Wyman, that bowl of rice didn't have a chance. Like, well, I got 3 minutes to shovel it down, man.
You're going to have to start eating in the bathroom or something, man. There's just too many cameras around here.
You do not take food into the bathroom. I don't even care if it's packaged up.
Nope.
Danny said something about eating a popsicle one time while he's doing his business. I'm like, that's just wrong.
Well, come on.
I think Danny
was he being serious or was he just trying to push
sure
your buttons?
He was both.
Ugh.
That's what he always
says. You know, the one question, and Ryan had limited time, so we had to let him go, but I really wanted to ask him the question that you brought up about that we hit on a couple times, the young guys, you know, which is it harder for, a pitcher or a position player who struggles, comes up and struggles? You know, is it better to have just, you know, thrown right back in the next night if you go for four?
Right.
Or is it better for the pitcher who gets, you know, 4 or 5 days to really evaluate what went wrong, break it down, then get back to it? you know,
or if he's in a funk, it gives him 5 days to sit and grind over
it.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's I think a really interesting question. I would like to get his take on it, but he had to go, so we didn't have time for that. But we'll ask him next time because a case can be made either way. I think I don't know if there is a right or wrong. Maybe it's individual. It's obviously unique to the individual.
Well, we could ask Blowers tomorrow too. Not that you know Blowers was ever a pitcher, but he's familiar with him. I mean, he does a great job during the broadcast. Yeah, I'll look for the slider here. Set up here, there. I mean, you know, he's tuned in, dialed in. But as far as the mentality, I wonder are pitchers kind of like the kickers, you know, especially like the bullpen guys. They're not around you all the time. They're not even in the dugout. They have to be out in the outfield. You know, they put them out there. I wonder if, you know, how they're looked at. I know that the guys that I lived with in college, the pitchers were always the guys that had the most talky talk, right? Because they're always
most
sitting
attitude.
Around waiting. Yeah, they were making things up. They had nicknames for everything. You know, like when they played dice, they could never just call it a six, you know. And then, you know, like four was windows.
Oh, they had a clever little thing.
Yeah, and then fives were something in a window.
Ah.
Yeah, so, I can't say the word. They had all these little, this lingo, all these things they, you know, just come up with because they have so much time to kill. You know, they're sitting around out there just talking.
Got all this time to be clever.
Yeah, making up nicknames. And
I don't know if there is that hierarchy, if you will. That's a hierarchy in football where you guys kind of look down on kickers as they're not really football players, but they're crucial to success. I mean, how often does the game come down to them succeeding? Right, kicking a game-winning field goal or a missed field goal, missed extra point, made extra point. I mean, it's an interesting dynamic in football that punters and kickers are looked at as sort of. I know you joke about it, but they are kind of considered. Yeah, they're not really a football player. They're specialists. They just do that. They do that thing. Whereas I don't think that exists in baseball. But
well,
we can ask Blowers about that.
They're not that different. I mean, there's a huge difference between Dwayne Brown and Myers.
Yeah.
You know, there's a huge difference. I mean, what they do and what their job is for the game, I mean, I don't think Jason Myers really understands.
Did you refrain from interacting with kickers and punters? Would you just sort of go out of your way to avoid them, or you just kind of had no reason to really approach them?
I really liked Norm Johnson
because
I remember him giving some heat to Boz one time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Messing with him or mad at him?
Because Norm was the guy who went and got sandwiches from Fill Your Belly Deli, which is
Mike Tice's
deli, and we would order our lunches. I'm sure Tice was throwing like a 50% surcharge on there on those. No, he wasn't. I'm kidding. But Norm, I think he paid Norm to go and get the sandwiches and bring them back, and Boz was complaining about it, and Norm, in like a really deadpan way, was like, you know, I'm pretty sure that it's not my job to cater to your every little need. Because Boz kind of treated people like he was the big show a little bit sometimes. And I don't know, he'd forgotten a mustard pack or something like that.
Oh, really? He was busting his chops about that, huh?
Yeah, so once Norm said that and had that tone, I'm like, okay, he's in. I like this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, there was also some strange dudes going on. Who am I thinking of? We had Ruben Rodriguez was our punter. He was a pretty regular
guy. Way back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, he got drafted the same year I did. They drafted a punter that year, Bob.
What round was he?
I don't know. There was like 12 rounds back there back then. But I think it was like in the 8th or 9th or something like that.
It's interesting that Tice had the Fill Your Belly Deli. Norm Johnson had a card shop, a collectible shop in Crossroads Mall in Bellevue.
That's right.
That I used to go to all the time as a kid.
Yeah.
I never saw him in there, but it was Norm Johnson's cards or collectibles or whatever. His name was on the door there. It was a cool place.
Wow. Yeah. He went and got sandwiches. That was his job. And I don't feel like, I don't know how much Tice must have paid him to do that, but he was a regular guy. But, you know, I just feel like the pitchers, and I'm not saying that they're, like, dorky in that way. I just think they might be the guys that have, like, the most nicknames and the most clever and the most joking around because they're just out there just killing it.
Yeah, like they just have all that time.
And they're not around the game. Like, they're relegated to the outfield. They have to stay out there and stay away from everybody. Don't distract us.
Stay in your area.
Until we need you, and then we'll call you in.
Yeah, until then, you're not to be seen or heard from. You just stay out there. We'll let you know when it's your time. You perk up when you hear that phone, champ. All right, so we appreciate the conversation with Ryan Roland-Smith. Always a good time with him. We're going to get back to our battle royale. We've been just taking a look at how each skill position compares in the NFC West. We talked about the quarterbacks amongst the four teams. That wasn't close. The running backs, definitely close. We had the Seahawks running back duo. Dave had him, I think you had him second. I had him third behind the Rams and the 49ers. Cardinals were in last. Coming up, we're going to take a look at the wide receiver combos in the division and how they compare. That is coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Dave, somebody sent in a text that said Rodriguez was round five.
Was he?
According to the texter.
Apparently they looked it up.
Wow, that's pretty high for a punter.
Yeah.
For a non-football player.
Yeah.
Well, the Seahawks picked Michael Dixon in, what, the fourth round? Was he fourth round?
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's a weapon.
He is. He really is. And I think one of my favorite things used to be down on the field. Lawyer Malloy is, I'm sorry, I was searching for a name because when they drafted Michael Dixon, I was at a place with Lawyer Malloy. And I know Lawyer just slipped my mind. I saw him at the post office a couple of years ago. But Lawyer looked at me and goes, what, they ain't got no more offensive linemen? There's no more offensive linemen for them to draft? They picked a punter in the fifth round?
Yeah.
So I thought that was really funny. But then when I got down on the field and was watching him during warmups and how he can just consistently hit like a 45-yard punt, and like get it out of bounds right at the 1 yard line.
He is a weapon.
Two yard line.
He shifts field position. He is an absolute weapon, and you never know when he's going to take off with the ball, Dave.
Yeah, that happened one time.
You never.
A couple years ago, but I think that was his rookie year.
Yeah,
2018. But yeah, I mean, it just. And then the other thing is the coverage is always good. You don't see a lot of returns because they, you know, coordinate. He's able to coordinate the height of the kick with the gunners. You know, that whole thing is tuned up.
And then one more, 425 said, pitchers are not like kickers, bruh. So there you go.
It's a former pitcher talking there.
Is that right?
Probably.
Okay. All right. Now let's get back to our NFC West Battle Royale, and we take a look at the wide receiver combos that exist in these four situations, comparing the skill positions on offense and who's coming out on top. We did quarterbacks. Obviously, the Seahawks win that. We did running backs earlier, and we gave the nod to the Rams. I had the 49ers second. You had the Seahawks second. We both had the Cardinals last. So now moving on to the wide receivers, you take a look at this, and you feel really good about DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett. You can throw in Dwayne Eskridge now as your first pick in this year's draft to be part of the equation. Could be Gerald Everett, perhaps. Maybe he'll be the third most targeted individual. Maybe it'll be Will Disley. We're not sure.
That's what I'm hoping.
But we're just talking about the wide receiver position, so that we'll limit it to those guys. But obviously, DK and Lockett both coming off record years in terms of receptions for Lockett and what DK was able to do. Combined 183 receptions, 2,357 yards, and 20 touchdowns between the two last year.
Yeah, well, and then you throw in, and this is what you're looking for in your group now, and maybe you get this from Dwayne Eskridge, but you throw in another 417 yards and 6 touchdowns because that's what you got from David Moore.
Yeah.
So with those guys all together, you know, 26 touchdowns, I think the number was like 2,700 yards with David Moore's in there. So hopefully you get something like that.
Yeah.
Out of Dwayne Eskridge.
Looking at the Cardinals, they've got DeAndre Hopkins, who's just ridiculous. He's just a beast. A.J. Green is new to the fold, and then you bring in Christian Kirk as well. Now, Hopkins and Kirk in 2020 combined 163 receptions for 2,028 yards and 12 touchdowns. A.J. Green, 47 catches, 523 yards, missed all of 2019 with an injury. I don't know where he's at physically these days, but he's not who he was. And I don't put a ton of emphasis now. Maybe he bounces back on some level because of the attention paid to Hopkins, and maybe it opens things up for him. But his name is more frightening than who he is on the field these days.
A.J. Green, you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, a couple of years ago, over the last 4 years, he started to miss some games. You know, missed 7 in 2018, didn't play in 2019, and then 2020 – just had 523 yards receiving. So I don't think he's what he used to be.
No, I don't think he is either. And the same is true for the next group in that you've got Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. Then you throw in the new acquisition, DeSean Jackson. He's not DeSean Jackson anymore. He's another guy who was very explosive, dealt with injuries. Woods and Kupp in 2020 combined for 182 catches, 1,191 yards. There's an extra number there. So a little over 1,100 yards.
Was there 1,100 maybe?
1,110 is what it is. but nine touchdowns. Jackson had 14 catches for 236 yards and a touchdown, just five games played last year. So, again, his name instills more fear than who he is at this point physically, in my opinion.
Well, it's going to be his 14th year.
He's been around a long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's with Philly last year, not great. You know, he went back and forth, Philly, Washington, he went to Tampa,
yeah.
And he goes to Philly. But, I don't feel great about those guys. I'm not sure what you're going to get at Ayuk. He was an okay as far as a freshman.
Oh, you're looking at the rookie. 49ers.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. I'm sorry. I'm looking at, Woods and Kupp. And Kupp, remember he got hurt in 2018 or 19 when he blew his knee out down there? It was in a game against the Seahawks.
It was against the Hawks.
It was the game where Justin Britt fought Aaron Donald.
Maybe that was 18.
Yeah, it was 18.
Yeah,
and I remember hearing him scream from the up in the press box. And that was when they had a crowd. But, you know, with Kupp, he was kind of right there in tune with Jared Goff. I mean, I feel like those two really were kind of tuned in. And, you know, I don't know if you're going to get that same thing with Matthew Stafford there. But, you know, Woods' numbers, I said this before, it always feels like that guy kills us. But he sort of does. It just felt just like it.
The timing of his success against the Seahawks, it feels crushing.
The playoff touchdown that he caught where he's just wide open.
He's one of those guys who could stink against everybody else, but then he'll show up against the Seahawks and have just two or three crucial catches or just in some crucial situation, all of a sudden there he is with a 15-yard grab. Or, you know, it's you know, I compare him to is like Cole Calhoun in Major League Baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Played for the Angels. He could be brutal. In fact, he was sent down to AAA, called back up. He was just scuffling big time for the Angels. But what does he do? He kills the Mariners every time.
I felt like Coco Crisp did that too.
For a while. Just those guys, they could stink against the rest of the league. You'd see him up at the plate, see the numbers. He's hitting 212, and he's striking out every other at-bat. You're like, oh, my goodness. Then he comes up, double, home run, whatever. He's just like, okay, I've had enough of this guy.
Yeah.
He just, you know, he's just kryptonite.
So Calhoun's like 5'8", 5'7". He just always
frustrating guy. Frustrating guy.
But, yeah, that's Robert Woods, basically. So, and if Kupp, you know, can get in tune with Stafford, I think he's a really good – he's not going to, you know, blow you away with his speed, but he's a great route runner.
Yeah, and then the 49ers, the final team to look at, Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and Richie James. Combined 2020 stats for all three, 116 catches, 1,533 yards, and seven touchdowns. So there's potential there with Ayuk, who's a young guy. You know who Deebo Samuel is and what he can do. But as we sit, we're just looking at who they are as we sit, not who they're going to develop into. I'm giving the edge to the Seahawks in this one. I think the weight of DK and Tyler Lockett outweighs everything that you're seeing with these other groups. DeAndre Hopkins may be the best individual receiver of this group as we sit right now. Maybe eventually it'll be DK, but if you're just saying who's the best receiver of everybody we just mentioned, I think it's DeAndre Hopkins. But the best combo, the best package, I think is the Seahawks.
Yeah. Well, and what about going forward also of this group? If you're down in L.A. doing the same exercise, looking at NFC West receivers, you're looking at DK Metcalf.
Who's not even scratched the surface yet. And then Eskridge, we have no idea what he's going to bring to the table.
Yeah.
So,
well, and he, you know, second round draft choice, I would be like, well, we'll see about that. Kind of like we were about Ayuk last year, but going into the season. But DK and Tyler Lockett are proven, and especially DK, you look at, you know, he's running this 100 meter dash thing. Jeez, I mean, it looks, you're like, I don't want to have to face this guy twice a year.
Yeah.
So
he's a problem.
I think he might be even more spectacular than DeAndre Hopkins.
All right. Coming up, our battle royale for the best offense concludes with tight ends. We're going to take a look at the tight end group coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
We got the professor, John Clayton, joining us at the top of the hour, so stay tuned for that. We've got some good NFL talk coming up, but we've been going through the NFC West, just comparing skill positions of all four teams and see who comes out on top. Quarterbacks, the obvious choice, Seattle Seahawks win that one. Running backs, we went through, gave the nod to the Rams. I have the 49ers second, Dave has the Seahawks second, I have the Seahawks third, we both have the Cardinals last. As far as running back duos go, we just went through 49ers, gave the edge to the Seahawks. And now we take a look at the tight ends, Dave, which I think will be interesting because you look at Gerald Everett and what he was able to do. He was the secondary tight end, I guess, if you will. Higbee was the prime tight end for the LA Rams. So Everett comes here with Will Disley, who's loaded with promise, but neither one of us can truly explain why he was absent from the offense last year when it was the first year he was able to play all 16 games. We had such high expectations of what was to come, and the tight ends as a group were just not really part of what was going on offensively, and we feel like that's going to change with a new offensive coordinator in Shane Waldron.
Yeah, and you know what? It could very well be time for Will Disley to step up. He might be the best tight end this year. I still think he has that kind of talent. You know, that's probably not what everybody else is thinking because you sign Gerald Everett, but who's incredibly athletic. I took a look at him, and of course we've been watching him for the last few years here, but he's got such great athletic ability, and once he gets the ball, he turns into a running back and, you know, makes contested catches, the whole thing. But Disley can do that too. You know, I keep thinking about some of the catches that he's made, and a lot of them where he just got open. Remember the catch in the Ram game in 2018? It's at home, and it was the same one where Tyler Lockett made his ridiculous toe-tap catch down in the end zone. Do you remember? It was right on the Seahawks sideline, and he caught it over his shoulder with his face mask.
Yeah.
So he, like, pinned it against his face mask. I mean, he's got incredible skills as far as the ball goes. And, you know, and that has – he's big into, you know, promoting kids playing every sport. You know, basketball, during basketball season, track or baseball or whatever. And he did that when he was growing up in Montana. And, you know, he started off as a D lineman at UW and then switched to tight end and got drafted in the fourth round and never looked back. But he was known as the best blocking tight end. So, look, you've got some pretty good tight ends. And George Kittle is the all-timer. I'm not saying that Disley could be that good. But I feel like he could be enough to where you would think, okay, well, that's clearly the second best tight end in the NFC West.
Yeah. As we sit, if we were going to do what we did with the wide receiver, saying who's the best individual receiver in the NFC West, I'd give that nod to DeAndre Hopkins as we sit right now. I think eventually it could be DK. I don't think he's that far behind, but yeah. I would put him behind. Hopkins is a beast, and he's proven it every year. So he would get my nod there, and I think the same is true here. If you're just talking about individual tight ends, George Kittle's the best. And to me, it's not that close as we sit right now. We'll see how guys develop. But the Seahawks, Gerald Everett, Will Disley, the combo. Disley's 24 years old. It'll be his fourth season in the league. Last year, just 24 catches for 251 yards and two touchdowns. Everett is 26 years old, his fifth season. Last year, 41 catches, 417 yards, and a touchdown. All right, pretty modest numbers. In both instances. Now looking at the Cardinals, they've got a combo of Max Williams and Darrell Daniels. Williams is 27 years old, his fifth season. Daniels is 26 in his sixth season. Their combined numbers last year, 16 catches, 194 yards, two touchdowns. Not that explosive.
Yeah, and that's not even, I'm trying to think of the name of the tight end that had like the longest catch in the game against the Seahawks. That was a 41-yarder because a linebacker failed to pick up a sail route, a crossing route the other way. But, yeah, they've had he actually emerged. I'm trying to remember his name. But anyway, I agree with you as far as Kittle goes. I think Kittle is by far the best tight end in the league right now. But, again, I do think –
You like him better than Kelce?
Yeah, I don't see Kelce as much, you know. I mean, a lot of that to me is – his success comes from he's really tuned in with Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. He really is. And so a lot of the routes that he runs, I'm not saying he's not a bad, you know, or he's not a great route runner, but a lot of it is those two, they have their own little game going on where it's like, hey, go that way, and, you know, all of a sudden he...
They got unspoken communication.
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of like D-Jack and Matt Hasselbeck used to have. So, yeah, but, I mean, Kelsey, I just think Kittle, he, to me, I'll take him every day over Kelsey just because I like how... What a great football player he is. I love that he'll block. I remember seeing him just dump Luke Kuechly his first year in the league on a blocking play. He's just an all-around tight end. Incredibly. And if you want one play that sort of sums up, and I think about it every time I hear George Kittle's name, it was that fourth down catch he had against the Saints in that game in a regular season where guys are face masking him and, you know, hanging on him. he's just shoving him to the ground.
He doesn't look that big. Yeah. I mean, he's a decent-sized guy. Like, Kelsey looks bigger to me. Just, you know, we can compare size in terms of their height and weight, but he just looks in stature just to be a bigger guy, whereas, you know, Kittle looks like he could be a tight end-slash-receiver type of body. He seems a little more, a little leaner, a little more wiry. I don't know. There's just that look to him, yet he's incredibly powerful after the catch. He really does become that running back, that physical runner, as you just talked about, just – throwing guys to the ground and running through guys. He's a heck of a player.
Yeah, I think he may have left for free agency. Dan Arnold is the guy I was trying to think of, the tight end. Not sure. He had 438 yards as far as last year goes. But, yeah, I'm just lamenting over that 41-yard crossing. Remember Jordan Brooks picked it up, and then they run it later in the game, and it didn't get picked up on the other side. I'm like, golly, it was a 41-yard catch. How does a tight end get open? You know, and that's the thing, too, with the tight end position. It's always like you don't see that these guys, like you were saying, I mean, does that guy look like the most super athlete? I mean, nowadays, like, nobody looks like Tony Gonzalez.
No.
They just look like, why are they getting open? They're not that fast.
They don't look fast on TV. Yeah. You're going, I don't know how that guy's getting so open. Like, Gronk does not look fast to me.
No.
He is always open, and he's outrunning guys.
But exactly.
When you watch him, he looks like he kind of lumbers, and he's very deliberate. I don't know. It's amazing. Just speaks to his overall talent and ability, and it's very deceptive.
Yeah. By the way, that guy did, and Lefko left him off because he was with the Panthers.
Yeah.
Dan Arnold did sign with the Panthers. But, I can't figure that out either. What is the phenomenon? I mean, I know they have big bodies.
Well, so you're down there on the field. I would assume they just are – decidedly faster than they appear, maybe just because of their size or something. I don't know. Bigger guys running, and it just looks slower than it actually is on the field.
That's probably it.
Rams have the combo of Tyler Higbee, no longer Everett. It's Johnny Munt who will be the other side of that. Higbee is a good player, 28 years old, going into his sixth season, 44 catches, 521 yards, and 5 touchdowns last year. Munt, just 4 catches for 53 yards.
Get out of Oregon, young guy. So.
And then... Quickly, the 49ers, it's George Kittle and Ross Dwelly. And Kittle, we've gone over. He's a Pro Bowler in 18. He was first-team All-Pro in 2019.
I think he set the record for tight ends most yardage in a season, and then Kelsey came back last year and beat it.
Yeah. To me, the 49ers win this just based on Kittle alone. I mean,
yeah, but I put the Seahawks a pretty solid second.
I would, too. I would put them second, and I would put the Rams third. And once again, the Cardinals are coming up at the bottom in a lot of these categories. So we'll see how it ends up. I mean, this is just a comparison as to where everybody sits currently. Doesn't, you know, take into account what they're going to develop into. And that is the case with Kyler Murray and people like that. So we'll see. But as they sit now, 49ers have the best tight end situation in the NFC West. I would put the Seahawks second, the Rams third, and the Cardinals fourth. That's how I see that one playing out. All right, we've got the professor, John Clayton, coming up next. If you guys have questions for John, now is the time to text in 710-710 to the Mac and Jack's text line. It's coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.